Morning, everyone. Earlier this morning, I visited the Governor-General here in Canberra and he accepted my advice for an election to be held on the 18th of May.
Well, hello, good people, and welcome to the election of 2019. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm the host of Australian Politics Live. During the election, we're doing something a little bit different with the podcast. Instead of racing to do in-depth interviews with various politicians, although we may do a little bit of that, we're going to focus on trying to dig a bit deeper. Look behind the stories that are emerging during the election contest. We're going to analyse them. We're going to dig in into some of the background, some of the history that have led us to being at this point in an election campaign season. And we're going to hear from some of the really tremendous voices that we have at Guardian Australia in terms of political analysis and deep analysis of policy issues. That's our objective anyway, and we look forward to you joining us week in and week out. We're starting today, though, with me. Today we're going to look at Bill Shorten, and we're going to look both at Bill Shorten as a man, as a politician, as a would-be Prime Minister, and the strategy Labor has deployed behind the scenes in order to get him ready. Today I'm going to have a chat about that with my wonderful producer, Miles Martignoni, who's going to ask me some questions, and we'll see what we can nut out together. Miles, hello.
Hello. So where did Bill Shorten come from?
He's from Melbourne. He was a student activist. He was a trade union official. He rose very quickly through the ranks in trade union circles. He was one of those trade union characters that was always had sort of chosen himself for a career in politics and was intent on making that translation from trade union to Labor politician. He was ambitious. He had sharp elbows. He was in a big hurry. And where I first encountered him, really, although he was always about, because he was one of those assiduous union characters who cultivates media commentators, who reaches out to journalists, who wants to signal that they're a man on the move. So he was always around. He was around in consciousness. But where I think I first really caught a significant look at him was during the Beaconsfield mine disaster in Tasmania.
A remarkable tale of survival against incredible odds. After 14 days trapped in a cage buried in the bowels of the earth, Todd Russell and Brad Webb removed their tags to signal the end of their shift.
During that crisis, Shorten appeared most days in the national media, on television, was quoted extensively.
Oh, it's sinking in. You don't realise how close you get to these things, and I was probably quite affected by it. I'm really, really happy. I'm happy for the families. I'm happy for Todd and Brand. I'm terribly, terribly happy for the rescue work.
He rallied very genuinely, I think, on behalf of those men in that crisis as a union official.
I actually feel sort of, I'm just glad it's over. I'm so glad it's over. It's not funny.
But he also used that opportunity to translate himself, introduce himself to a national audience.
Repeal the laws that criminalise our efforts to ensure our union and our voices are heard in protecting safety in the workplace.
After Beaconsfield, Shorten began making that transition from union leader to would-be parliamentarian, sought pre-selection for the correct seat and arrived in Canberra with a lot of attention around him because he was one of those union leaders, Bob Hawke style, who was fashioning himself for big things, presenting himself for big things. There was a lot of hype around him and expectation around him.
I rise today in full recognition of the honour which the people of Maribyrnong and the Australian Labor Party have granted me by enabling me to serve in this Parliament. And I rise in full recognition of the historic moment the Parliament and the Australian people witnessed yesterday when we said sorry to the stolen generation. This week has shown us all the real meaning of the politics of hope, and it's a privilege to be part of this. I hope my role in this Parliament will serve to assist and support these ideals and advance a fair Australia. Thank you.
But he arrived in the middle of the poisonous civil war of the Rudd, Gillard, fight?
Earlier this evening, Julia Gillard came to see me and has requested a ballot for the leadership of the Labor Party.
I know the Rudd government did not do all it said it would do, and at times it went off track.
Still an extraordinary period in contemporary Labor history. Some people, I suppose, were repelled by the culture that they washed up into. Greg Combey, another union official who arrived sort of roughly the same time, I know really struggled with that poisonous atmosphere that they entered. Shorten moved with alacrity to be a power broker in those big transactions during that period, whether Julia Gillard would replace Kevin Rudd, whether Julia Gillard would be torn down and be replaced by Kevin Rudd ahead of the 2013 election. So Shorten had some junior portfolios. He did policy work. He did important policy work. The National Disability Insurance Scheme was, in fact, his idea, translated by Jenny Macklin, into policy during that period. He wasn't all sharp elbows and power broking. There was policy work happened as well, but he was a junior minister in that period and a bit on the periphery in terms of the policy engine room of that government. But he was certainly a significant player in the personality struggles over that period in government. And it's his role as the self-styled, self-appointed assassin that Australians most remember about Shorten from that period.
I have carefully considered my position. I have now come to the view that Labor stands the best chance to defend the legacies of this term of government and to continue improving the lives of millions of Australians if Kevin Rudd is our leader.
Who is Bill Shorten? Well, he's all those words I've invoked, I suppose. He's ambitious, he's focused, he's strategic. He doesn't sort of shut down his instincts. He's very reliant on instinct. He does go with his gut, and he trusts his gut. In terms of how he's acted in the Labor leadership, if we sort of go back slightly in history, Miles, and think about how he got there, he was a power broker during the terrible Rudd-Gillard Civil War. So he sort of had that kind of power broker ruthlessness element of his political personality that some politicians kind of cultivate in Canberra. Some sort of go on the leadership path, some go on the power broker path. And for a while it looked as though Shorten would sort of default to the power broker path rather than the leadership path. But he is a highly ambitious person. After the loss in 2013, there was a view that it was better to allow Bill Shorten to be leader than cut Bill Shorten off from being leader, because I think, to put it bluntly, people felt it was better to have Bill Shorten out the front than standing behind them. And that's sort of propelled him along the path to be the right-wing candidate for the leadership after the election loss in 2013. You would have thought from that, from Bill Shorten's basic sort of ambition and fluency and familiarity with power, that he may have sort of been an overweening political leader, that he may have been a leader that sort of wanted to centralise everything, wanted to dominate colleagues, wanted to sort of subdue his organisation in a way. But what we discovered about Shorten in the leadership is that he led in quite an unexpected way. Rather than defaulting to the brute power side of his personality, he defaulted to the EQ side of his personality and put a lot, I think, of genuine effort into trying to glue the Labor Party back together after that period. And the way he does that is to run a genuine shadow cabinet process. Like, he doesn't keep, I mean, certain things are restricted to the leadership group, certain decisions are restricted to the leadership group, which is a sort of tighter circle. But most of the big stuff, most of the really big policy stuff over the last couple of terms has been deliberated through the shadow cabinet in many, many, many freewheeling discussions. So Shorten likes to engage. He likes to talk things through exhaustively, and he wants his ministry to have buy-in to this project. So he gives them a lot of agency, which not a lot of political leaders do. And that surprised me, frankly, that that was the way he would choose to be a Labor leader. It was slightly different to how I expected he would be. And he's been benefited as well, not only by the sort of collaborative style that he has chosen to engage in, but through the change of rules, which makes it harder to move against Labor leaders, and also by the loyalty of his real inner circle, the Labor leadership team. Tanya Plibersek has been very loyal. Penny Wong has been very loyal. Stephen Conroy was very loyal before he departed. Don Farrell, who's now the Deputy Senate leader, also very loyal. Jenny Macklin, the key Labor policy contributor of the last 20 years, was a lot of the engine room, a lot of the heavy lifting behind Labor's social policy, also loyal to Shorten, loyal to the operation. He's been the beneficiary of a terrible trauma, if I can express it that way. Labor people, having lived through the Rudd-Gillard debacle, let's just call it what it is, remain deeply traumatised by that experience. They remain sort of incredulous that they won government with a great affirmation from the Australian public, and they blew it. They can't quite fathom how that happened, how they allowed that to happen. And Shorten has been the beneficiary of that. Shorten has been the beneficiary of the equal and opposite reaction to that, that there has been a collective consciousness that we can't do that again. We have to do something else. Now, I'm not saying that the Labor leopard has necessarily changed its spots forever and a day, but Shorten as a political leader has been the beneficiary of that post-traumatic stress, if we can put it in those terms.
He seems very prepared, ready to go. I mean, is he really ready to face Morrison in this election campaign?
Well, I would rather be him than Morrison in this election campaign. But I also think that Labor can lose this campaign. Labor is heading into the campaign with a high-risk political strategy.
Labor stands for the idea of being a brave political party, speaking up for those in our society who have no one to speak for them.
It's essentially taking a set of propositions, a set of policies to the Australian people on a judgment that the Australian people are, as we're the sort of resting plumb line of the Australian voting public, is more progressive certainly than the coalition. Is in it more progressive than that. But the question is the sort of plumb line, is the Australian middle as progressive as Labor wants it to be in this election cycle?
If we win the next election, we will put back every single dollar that the Liberals have cut from public schools and public hospitals.
Yeah. This is the most ambitious, risky set of policies that Labor has laid before the public since the Whitlam era. This government is certainly left of Hawke and Keating, and to some degree left of Rudd and Gillard. And it's not seeking to ride in the slipstream of the coalition in terms of where the coalition is positioned. It's repudiating where the coalition is positioned, just saying enough of that, enough of all of that. We are, if you elect us, we are going to take the country in a different direction. We are going to pick it up by the collar, and we're going to put the country down where we think it needs to be.
That is the real choice that our country faces at this election. It is the decision which every Australian has the right to make. Do we want the best healthcare system in the world or the biggest tax loopholes?
And that's again, going back to Bill Shorten and his gut and trusting his gut. That is a judgment they've made, that the policies will work in the current zeitgeist. But that judgment is not scientific. That judgment is an anticipation of where they think the public are at. Now, it's a calculation. it may prove to be correct. It also may prove to be incorrect, in which case this will be the last election where Bill Shorten is the front man for the Australian Labor Party.
Do we want a fairer, more equal country where the economy works in the interests of everyone, or do we want another 3 years of drift with the top end of town profiting much better than everybody else?
And how, I mean, the coalition's been trying to find ways to neutralise him. I mean, can you talk us through the narrative of how they've tried to attack him over the past few years?
Yeah, well, the coalition's very focused on Shorten's unpopularity with Australian voters. And that's not dumb, because Bill Shorten is unpopular with Australian voters. Interestingly, he is also the Labor cohort, the Labor rusted on voters, are also less sold on him as their figurehead than coalition voters are sold on Scott Morrison, for example. The last time this was tested in the Guardian Essential poll, Scott Morrison has had support from 77% of coalition voters. Shorten had the support of 66% of Labor voters, and that's where Shorten's been for much of his leadership. There's not even the Labor cohort is entirely sold on Bill Shorten as their figurehead. So the government has thrown absolutely everything at Shorten, trying to sort of mine this hesitation that Australian voters have about him.
And Bill Shorten is all over the place, and he cannot be trusted with the Australian economy. The one thing is clear, that his instinct and his commitment always is to inflict higher taxes on everyone.
I have a theory about Bill Shorten that I want to put to you.
Give it to me.
The coalition have been attacking his popularity, right? They've been attacking his popularity for so long because he's unpopular.
Yep.
But it hasn't really gotten worse, has it? He hasn't gotten more unpopular. So is he already as unpopular as he'll ever be? Like, is this... Is he too unpopular to sabotage?
No, that's a really good question. That is a really good question. You're right, because he sort of started off a low base and he's never really clambered up much off the low base. Can it get any worse? It's sort of hard to see how, but people talk about 2007, but I actually think this is more like 2004. Now, that was a matchup of John Howard versus Mark Latham. Bill Shorten won't thank me for the comparison, but anyway, it's one of those election cycles where Labor took a high visibility contrast strategy with the incumbent coalition government and came off well and truly second best. Now, there's a point of me invoking Latham, because Latham has had a different curve to Shorten. For a while, Australian voters really kind of switched on to Mark Latham. He was talking their language across a range of issues, and John Howard was deeply freaked out by Latham. Latham completely wrong-footed Howard and introduced a different conversation in Australian politics, and that worked right up until the point where Latham was massively oversold as this messianic leadership figure. Voters looked at him because they were invited to by the Australian Labor Party that held him up as a messiah, looked at him really closely and thought, no. And things tanked, and you saw it tank. So things can move and move precipitously. Now, you're right in the sense that Shorten has never had a stratospheric moment. So it's hard to fall off a mountain you haven't climbed. And I suppose maybe there is some benefit in that. Labor MPs who tell me, and of course this is, you've got a discount because this may be spin, but a number of them are saying different versions of the same thing. They're saying in conversations that they're having with voters, what they've noticed over the last 6 to 9 months is that Australian voters are now assuming that Bill Shorten will win this election. So they're now coming up with locutions to Labor MPs like, oh, well, I suppose he can't be any worse than that other shithead. Things like that, right, that indicate to some Labor MPs that voters are already trying to reconcile how they are going to vote for Bill Shorten, a leader who they don't much care for. So if that's what's going on, if that feedback is right, that voters are preparing them themselves to cast a vote for Shorten, even though they're not sold, well, then unless something substantial emerges during the election campaign that causes a precipitous crash, a la Mark Latham, then that slow burn, which is kind of your point, Miles, will benefit him in the sense that nobody is over-egging Shorten as a political product. No one is saying this guy can cure incurable disease, can pitch Labor into a 15-year term in office. No one is saying those things about Bill Shorten. So perhaps that reflects a certain shift in consciousness in Australia. Perhaps we're over messianic political leaders. Perhaps we're over, you know, this kind of charisma being lionised in our political system. You know, we have seen leaders who have been enormously charismatic yet can't actually deliver change. Malcolm Turnbull was the obvious case in point. Maybe everybody, it's not only just about setting the bar a bit lower with Shorten, maybe voters are setting the bar a bit lower, having looked at their politics, having concluded that it's not in great shape, having concluded that some of these leaders in contemporary times have turned out to be a bill of goods sold to them that have under-delivered on their so-called promise. So maybe that dynamic helps Shorten in this campaign.
But it sounds like essentially what the next 5 weeks are is people looking at Bill Shorten and trying to figure out, can he be my prime minister?
Yep. That's what it comes down to in the end. I think there was, if Scott Morrison had raced to the polls shortly after the leadership nastiness last year, if he had taken out Malcolm Turnbull and sprinted off to the polls, I think they would have been smashed. I think they would have been slaughtered. Because people were so angry about that set of events, so angry at the self-indulgence and craziness of it. What Morrison has managed to do is over, granted it's taken him 6 months of dogged work, but he's put them back in the position they were in a polling sense, sort of last August, where Turnbull was. Morrison has put them back in within striking distance. He's dragged them back to be competitive at the fight. So, yeah, I think a lot of people who swinging voters who are really cross with the vacancy of this period of coalition government will be looking closely at Bill Shorten to see if he is a safe place to park their vote. I suspect a number of them haven't made up their minds yet, and that's going to be the story of the campaign. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Thank you, as always, to Miles, producer extraordinaire, and to Hannah, fellow producer extraordinaire, for all of their hard work in bringing this pod series together. We're going to be talking to colleagues who have been out on the road, out in targeted seats, out in regional areas. We're going to try and get you behind the policies. We're going to try and get you behind the stories over the next 5 weeks. We look forward to your company.